and their historian residence online now, Cormac Moore. Hello, Cormac. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Noel. Very good, thanks.
Okay, and we're going to talk about these talks between De Valera and David Lloyd George. So give us a background, please.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people are aware around this time the truce between Sinn Féin and the IRA and British forces came into effect on 11th of July. And that's what Sinn Féin and De Valera had asked for there to be a truce before talks would begin on reaching a settlement with the British. But pretty much immediately after the truce, De Valera, with an entourage of senior figures, including Griffith, Count Plunkett, Robert Barton, Eamon Duggan, and the Dublin Lord Mayor, Lawrence O'Neill, they went over to London on the day after the truce came into effect, mm-hmm. on 12th of July. And from the 14th of July, a series of meetings between De Valera and Lloyd George took place, four meetings in total, up until the beginning of August, to try and reach a settlement between Sinn Féin and the British government.
Okay. So how did it go, and how long did it last, and what was the outcome?
Well, not great, now, to put it bluntly. They didn't really see eye to eye with each other. Lloyd George was actually like a schoolchild before the first meeting. He was so excited. His secretary, come mistress, Frances Stevenson, she said he was pacing up and down the room. He was very excited. Well, it's just it's a big moment for him. He wanted to be the man that was going to solve the Irish question, which has plagued previous British governments for decades. And he actually had a big room that with kind of a map of the world with all these red blotches all over it, showing the might of the British Empire, and he was going to impress upon De Valera. But he wasn't happy with the first meeting with De Valera. He felt he was like talking to De Valera was like picking up mercury with a fork.
Wow.
And whereas De Valera, it was stuck to his guns in terms of what the British had done and he saw himself as a representative of the whole Irish nation, including unionists, and claimed that and Britain had no right to mutilate their country.
Mm-hmm.
And Northern Ireland had already been established at that stage. Now, it was on the table, and Sinn Féin and made sure that it would be on the table, that his status was in jeopardy, and something that James Craig soon find out from Lloyd George himself. But overall, the meetings didn't go well. You had a situation whereby the British offered 26 counties Dominion status, which was very similar to the kind of government that Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and so forth had, which had never been offered before to any Irish representative. So that was a concession, you could argue, on the British side.
Yes.
But De Valera gave two options, basically: either Dominion status, for the 32 counties, or a full republic for the 26.
Mm-hmm.
And he was open to a county by county kind of option for the six counties in the north that they could vote to remain in or out of the republic. So that's what essentially what there were two very different kind of scenarios. And Lloyd George said, look, he had no control over Ulster. They were adamant they were going to stay out of Dublin Parliament, and to which De Valera said, "Well, look, that's you're the ones who put them, give them their Parliament. You sort it. Mm-hmm. It's up to you to sort it."
I just wonder about some of the preconceived ideas maybe De Valera had gone in, because Lloyd George was known for being a Welsh wizard and changing tack.
Yeah.
And then you had this thing with the map on the wall, which sort of It sort of indicates, well, we're not going to change much. We're the British Empire. So, I mean, you listen to us and we'll tell you. That's the perception, I imagine, going in there that he might have had. Could be wrong, of course.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely not. And Lloyd George was a formidable negotiator. You have to remember, he was heavily involved in the Treaty of Versailles just 2 years earlier. It was a huge, big international conference which saw the breakup of the European map and its kind of reshaping with a lot of different new countries formed. He was, one of the main architects of that. And so, he was formidable, as I said, negotiator. He obviously had a very long career in Westminster, which was a far more kind of rigorous place for debate and opposition than the Dáil was, which was kind of where De Valera was schooled. There was a number of advantages that Lloyd George had over De Valera, and obviously when the treaty negotiations began in October, the Irish delegates, which obviously De Valera wasn't part of, they found out as well that they had a lot of disadvantages over that hugely kind of a British negotiating team with the whole empire behind them, and that experience of trenchant opposition by established parliamentary procedures that the Irish didn't have. So, yeah, De Valera was against that with Lloyd George. But De Valera was a very bright, very kind of a capable person as well. And like all of the people within Sinn Féin recognised he was their strongest card when it came to negotiating. And Lloyd George found he couldn't use his full powers of persuasion.
Yes,
on De Valera. De Valera stuck to his guns, and was quite formidable as well in terms of De Valera was open to other solutions other than a republic, and he came up with an external association concept that he pretty much devised himself, which would have seen kind of Ireland associated with the British Commonwealth, but not kind of outside of it as well. So it's kind of a way of appeasing some of the more trenchant and people at home, but also not being going totally away from the British viewpoint as well. So, they didn't see eye to eye at that juncture, in those talks in July, mid July to early August.
So did it sort of end in disharmony, more or less?
Yeah, no, and there was a couple of threats by the British that the truce was off, there was no point continuing to talk. But they did decide, both parties, that they would actually continue talking and continue with the truce. So De Valera left London, was told to come up with counter-proposals, which he did, which were unacceptable to the British. And there was a lot of kind of megaphone diplomacy and accusation versus counter-accusation for the months between De Valera's meeting with Lloyd George and the treaty negotiation. And then it was decided in September that, look, let's have a proper full negotiation for Senate plenary will be appointed. And Sinn Féin, the Dáil actually backed that, obviously supported by De Valera. And subsequently, the treaty negotiations began in October. And obviously, without De Valera there, and the rest, as
they
say, is history.
Now, just reading about Lloyd George himself and his secretary and mistress and soulmate to become. She archived most of this stuff, so it seems to correspond with history itself, the stuff she had written about him himself, about the meetings, his approach to meetings, his thoughts after the meetings. So it gives you a good insight, as I say, into what went on and what you're saying there as well, Cormac. It corresponds with all of that.
Yeah, well, look, actually, her diaries are a really great source. Either Thomas Jones, he was the cabinet secretary, private secretary to Lloyd George. So you've got two great kind of first-hand sources about Lloyd George's thinking with Francis Stevenson and Thomas Jones. But look, Lloyd George was a formidable opponent for the Irish. Lord Beaverbrook, the media tycoon, called him the big beast. So of all the people involved in British politics at the time, no one had the gravitas or even the single-mindedness to get a result on Ireland that Lloyd George did, and everything literally went through him.
Yeah,
but he did come up with a stern opponent with De Valera, and De Valera wasn't for budging, really.
Indeed.
Was all disappointed.
You'd wonder if there was someone else over there instead of Lloyd George, what it would have been like. But then again, as you say, De Valera was just as formidable and bullheaded as well. So it's meant to be, you might say, and the rest is history.
The rest is history, exactly, yeah.
Okay, great talking to you again, Cormac. Thank you very much for that. Annie, the talks coming up.
Yeah, there's a few festivals. I'm preparing a couple of talks for the Festival of History now, which will be in September and October. But a number of talks for different societies and so on.
Okay, I'll be talking to you about those over the next few weeks anyway as well. Thank you very much, Cormac. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the good weather.
You too, Noel. Thanks. Yeah, you too. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye. And that's Cormac Moore, a historian in residence there. And interesting stuff to read up on, isn't it?